Blog Talk Radio.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Throughout the course of my campaign, we have seen a lot of heartbreak. We have seen a lot of danger, but you all have stayed with me. And so for all of your support, I would really like to thank you. Though my opposition thinks of you as the lowest of the low. Well, I don't think that's fair. There are a lot of worse people out there. Please understand, I'm working for you.
Okay, because I'm on the landline. But
this is your campaign too.
So I'm going to hang up now. I dial the 914 number, okay? Stay on which one? The 914 number, right?
Please listen to me when I say...
That's correct. Okay, bye-bye.
That your vote was all that mattered. And I am really very flattered that you believe in me. Please know I won't disappoint you. Cause I'm really just one of you. I deal with bills just like you do. Only mine costs more money. Now when you'll excuse the candidate I am too. For a photo opportunity or two. Got a lot of work to do.
Well, welcome to the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. As always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. Well, you know, it's September and the primaries are coming up, wherein we will vote for Senate officials, and even John Boehner, the Secretary of State, is coming up for re-election in November this year. And as you know, Boehner has brought a lawsuit against President Obama and stopped the unemployed from getting their unemployment checks after 26 weeks. As a member of the House, Boehner will seek to hold his office as part of the general elections on November 4th. And elections for Senate officials will be held on Tuesday, September 9th. So that's coming up. And, you know, I read that in the past primary, the voter turnout was about 46.2%. Now, come on, folks, we can do better than that. So let's make 2014 a bonus year and get to the voting booth to get the people out of office who should not be there and put the people in office who should. Well, my guest today is former Councilman Robert Jackson. He is running for a Senate seat in the 31st District and is hoping to be elected on Tuesday, September 9th. So get out and vote. Jackson is from the 31st District, which is uniquely diverse. As I understand it, it's a dynamic district which stretches from Manhattan's Upper West Side to Washington Heights and includes Marble Hill. And it might include Hamilton Heights. I'm not really sure. I'll have to ask Mr. Jackson. A Democrat, Robert Jackson, served as community school board president, city council leader, and education committee chair. And Jackson has fought for workers' rights, union rights, and to pass the Women's Equality Act, the New York Dream Act, and for an increase in minimum wage. He is also a marathon runner, who just recently organized the Race for Peace. Well, anyway, I have the Senate candidate here, so why don't we welcome Robert Jackson to the show. How are you, Mr. Jackson?
Well, I'm doing great, Deidre. Let me thank you for having me on your show this afternoon.
Well, it is my pleasure. Well, let's tell the people something about you. Give me a little bit about your background, where you were born and raised. I know you're a New Yorker for sure.
Yes, I am. I was born in Harlem Hospital in 1950 and raised in Hamilton Heights section that is commonly known back then as Sugar Hill. And my family moved to the Bronx in 1963 and attended public school systems in New York City, Benjamin Franklin High School, more specifically on 116th Street in Franklin Delano Roosevelt Drive in Manhattan, and then went to college at SUNY New Paltz, where I was graduated there and came back to Manhattan in 1975, my wife and myself, and we raised three beautiful girls that are now 39, 34, and 27, and I've been actively involved in New York City, more specifically Washington Heights and Inwood, where I was a president of the Parents Association and involved in the president Parents Association for 19 continuous years, on a school board, elected five terms of office for 15 years, where my colleagues voted me the president about 7 to 8 terms in a row, a one-year term.
Wow.
And then I worked for a labor union for 22 years where I represented employees with grievance hearings and disciplines and contract arbitrations and discipline arbitrations, and then elected to the city council for the last – say that again?
Did you take up political science in school? What led you to get into politics?
Well, I was a sociology urban studies major where I was advocating for – residents of Newburgh, New York. I remember I got into an altercation at the social services office in the county seat, and when I got back to New Paltz, they had already contacted the New Paltz police, campus police, because I was in an official vehicle in my capacity as a student advocating for people down in Newburgh. So I was like called, you know, we got a call from the police department that you were down there causing a ruckus. But I really wasn't causing a ruckus. I was just trying to represent the people of that particular area. So I went to SUNY New Paltz. Say that again?
Helping the communities out has always been in your blood?
It has been. I mean, ever since, as I indicated, even when I was at SUNY New Paltz, I was the president of the Black Student Union, and then when I worked for the state of New York, I was a shop steward for the union that represented us, and subsequently I was a labor relations specialist, and I was up against attorneys a lot of times, mostly all of the times in arbitrations, and people said, "Are you an attorney at law?" I said, "No, I'm a labor relations specialist, and that's what I do. I represent people." But you know, even I was a president of the Democratic Club in Northern Manhattan, judicial delegate, county committee person, all in the Democratic Party, and tenant leader in the building in which I currently live. I don't own, I wish I did own, but I live in a rent-stabilized apartment, and I've been fighting to make sure that tenants and neighbors are protected and know their rights under the law with respect to any landlord that is trying to take advantage of them. So that's my brief history in the city council. Obviously, I chaired the contracts committee for 4 years where we first passed the first MWBE, Minority and Women-Owned Business Law, in New York City, and then subsequently chaired the education committee for 8 years. And in the city council, I co-chaired the Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus for 8 years. So I have a record of leadership and proven of getting results for my community. That's a
now,
quick summary
about
of who
affordable,
I am.
What do you think about affordable housing, since you're saying that you lived in rent-stabilized apartment? Now, I understand that once you move out of there, then they can take that away. Is that true?
No, it really depends on, for example, I live in a rent-stabilized apartment building, and if, in fact, someone moved out, then under the law, the landlord has a right to have a vacancy increase that has been set by the Rent Guidelines Board, and then to go up on the whatever increase that was agreed by the Rent Guidelines Board. So recently, the New York City Rent Guidelines Board said the increase for a one-year lease will be 1%, and a two-year lease, 2.7%. Prior to that, the previous increase was, I believe, 4% for a one-year lease and 7.5% for a two-year lease. So when I renewed my lease for 2 years, my increase was 7.5%. But anyone as of October this year, I believe, October 1st, will be 1% for a one-year lease and 2.7% for a two-year lease. Bill de Blasio, you know, that's what?
That's more reasonable. I mean, the rents are going up and up. They're outrageous.
Well, that is very reasonable. As you know, our mayor, Bill de Blasio, had called for a 0% increase, but that did not happen. But when you compare this increase compared to prior increases, this was very, very good. I know some people said there should have been nothing, but I think we have to be realistic. As I've said to people, we do not live in a socialist country or a nationalist country. We live in a democracy, and we live in a capitalistic society. So understanding that the landlords, the owners that own these buildings, are not doing it for free. They're there to make a profit. Our job as legislators are to make sure that the laws are being implemented and that we try to pass laws that's going to benefit overall the people of New York City. And as you know, the average family of four in New York City only earns about $57,000 a year. The average family, that's taking everyone combined. But in the community that I represented in Harlem and Washington Heights and certain parts of Inwood, when people said, when we talk about affordable housing, and the question that many people ask, affordable to whom? You know, because the rents, if you're talking about $1,500, $1,700, $2,000, that's not affordable to the average person that I represent. Now, under the law, as you know, if the landlord takes the rent up past $2,500, then the apartment is destabilized or decontrolled, meaning that the landlord will be able to charge whatever they can get for the apartment, because under this current state law, the ceiling is $2,500. Above that is decontrolled, and the landlord can charge whatever they want. And what I see happening quite often is that, so if I vacated my apartment right now, I've lived in this apartment for 37 years, they would rehab the entire apartment, tear down the kitchen, the bathrooms, and what have you, and so forth, and do everything over. So besides the vacancy increase, what I spoke about earlier, and besides the normal increase under the Rent Guidelines Board, which as of October 1 will be 1% for one year lease and 2.7 for 2 years, they will have they will put in for an increase based on the rehab that they did. And in essence, many landlords are attempting to do rehabs to take it above the $2,500 so it can be decontrolled so they can charge whatever they want. And that's what we as legislators and advocates in the field must look after in order to protect those that are living here and then try to make New York City affordable for those individuals that want to stay here, and especially the families that are making the average salary, what I indicated, which is about $55,000, $66,000 for a family of four.
I agree, and it almost seems like they're trying to move people out of Manhattan and making that exclusively a wealthy borough.
Well, that's the way it seems clearly, and that's why, so for example, when I was a member of the city council and Scott Stringer was the borough president, as you know, Scott Stringer is now the city controller of New York City. He put forward a proposal. He asked me to go along with a rezoning of West Harlem. And the rezoning was not to increase the density and also to increase to change the character of West Harlem, but the purpose of that was to maintain the character, physical character of West Harlem. As you know, some of it is part of Sugar Hill, which is a zone that cannot be changed unless it's approved by the City Planning Commission, but also to make sure that some people would not buy some buildings, tear them down, and build huge skyscrapers. And so we rezoned West Harlem from 126th Street to 155th Street and Edgecombe to, I think, Riverside Drive in order to protect the built-in character of the residents that live there in those buildings.
Well, speaking of that, the infrastructure of New York City seems to be falling apart. Wouldn't that offer jobs to people? Where people are looking for jobs everywhere, but rebuilding New York City would be one way of work, would it not?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, last year I attended a ceremony at City Hall Park where Mayor Bloomberg was opening up the third water tunnel. And as you know, that third water tunnel has been in the building stage for a long, long time, I think more than two decades. And it's finally going to bring a third water tunnel to New York City in the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars. And so these people you don't even see because they're down like 600 feet below ground building that water tunnel. And that is infrastructure. What was said that if, for example, if there was a collapse of one of the water tunnels, we only have two, that it would be a disastrous impact on New York City overall. So now with three water tunnels, they can, you know, look at one of the old water tunnels and do some stuff to repair it to make sure that New York City has the type of water it needs in order to help the people overall and make sure that there's no duress, no negative impact on the people of New York City. And that's a good thing. But also, we have to upgrade the electrical systems. We have to upgrade the cable systems. We have to upgrade our sidewalks and things like that. And all of that takes billions and billions of dollars. And those are the type of dollars those are is not expense dollars, but those are capital money. And normally what you do is you bond out that stuff over decades. And thus the credit rating of New York City, we need it to be as high as possible. So the loans that are taken out in order to deal with infrastructure, major repairs and rebuilding of bridges and things like that and roads, that the interest rates will be very, very low for New York City in the long run. And that's the type of positive economic development that must be maintained in order for New York City to be, in my opinion, the capital of the world.
Well, once you become senator, if you do, and we hope you do, what would you do? I mean, what are some of the things that you would work on for New York City?
Well, I've laid out about seven different things that are important to the people of my district. District 31, as you indicated, the most northern part is Marble Hill, and the most southern part is 26th Street and 9th Avenue in the Chelsea area. In fact, Elliott Houses, which is part of New York City Housing Authority, public housing, is the most southern part of my district. And I've said that jobs and economic development should be number one. And jobs, because if you don't have a job, you can't pay your rent, you cannot pay your mortgage, you can't feed your family. So a job is number one. And not a job working at McDonald's or Burger King making $8 an hour. And for those listeners that do not live in New York City or New York State, $8 an hour is the minimum by law that an employer can pay. So jobs and economic development, good paying jobs is very, very important. And number two, affordable housing. I've heard the story of the lack of affordable housing, not only in the 31st Senatorial District, but all over the city of New York, and especially in Manhattan. As you indicated, people are saying that Manhattan is becoming only for the rich. And here's one example. And I represented New York City Council, the 7th Councilmatic District, which was, you know, Washington Heights, Inwood, West Harlem, but also the 10th Councilmatic District was Washington Heights, Inwood, and Marble Hill. And so basically my colleague, my former colleague, Idonis Rodriguez, represented the 10th. And within the 10-year census period, he lost 23,000 constituents. And you may ask, where did they go? Or they went over to the Bronx because the rents, they could not afford to pay. Either one, the rents were too high, or two, they were evicted and they could not have enough to afford the type of rents that currently are being asked for in Washington Heights and Inwood. And so they went over to the Bronx. I lost 3% of my constituents in my 7th Councilmatic District. So that's just an example to prove that there is a loss of residents as a result of the lack of affordable housing and the increasing rents that are being charged.
Board stores closing up because they can't even afford the rent.
Sure, sure. And that's why going back in 2007, I believe, or 2008, I put forward a bill called the Small Business Survival Bill. And basically what that bill said was that if you were a small business, a shoe repair shop or beauty salon or grocery store or a card shop, and the landlord was saying to you, okay, your lease is up, and now we're taking up your rent 300%, and you say, I can't afford that. You're going to run me out of business. People are not going to pay $8 for a birthday card or pay, you know, $25 to put on your heels on your shoes. This bill would basically, if the owner and the store owner and the landlord could not agree on a lease agreement, then a mediator would come in and attempt to mediate between the parties to try to reach an agreement so that the store owner would stay in business. And finally, the bill said that if, in fact, a mediator could not handle the matter, it would go to binding arbitration, where an arbitrator would hear from both parties and then make a decision. So that bill was signed on by about 35 members, but it didn't go anywhere because Mayor Bloomberg was against it, the real estate industry was against it, and also our Speaker Christine Quinn was against it. So. But you got to keep trying. You got to keep putting forward. And that's what I did with education going back when I filed a lawsuit against the state of New York where people said, you know, you can't beat the state. Are you crazy? And I said, when it comes to my kids, I would do almost anything. And so we filed a lawsuit against the state of New York. It took 13 years to litigate, and we won billions of dollars for the children of New York City. And that is something that New York One, which is a station in New York City that has news and a lot of political talks, as you know, Deidre, they named myself and our attorney, Michael Rebell, and the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, that was our campaign. In January of 2004, they named us New Yorkers of the Year for 2003. And I've said publicly that in the 20 years that New York One has been naming New Yorkers of the Year, I'm the only elected public official to be named New York of the Year. That's something I'm very proud of. So that's
just a couple
of examples of the situation
that exists. But New York itself should have awarded you for that, for bringing money
well, let me
into
tell you
the
what,
public.
Let me tell you what UFT did. And as you know, UFT represents approximately 200,000 teachers and educators in New York City. 2 years ago, they gave me the highest civic award that they give to anyone, and that is the John Dewey Award, and which was presented to me 2 years ago, and I gave that in honor of my mother, who is now deceased, and I cried receiving that award because, you know, my mother is my mother, and she's in my heart every single day. But former President Bill Clinton received that. Martin Luther King Jr. received the John Dewey Award, Eleanor Roosevelt, just to name a few notable individuals that received that award. So I was very, very pleased. And I remember Mike Mulgrew, the president of the union, said, whatever you do, wherever you go, you will have us behind you 100%. That's what he said 2 years ago. So, but this race today, the 31st Senatorial District, is about an individual, myself, that's going to go up and represent the people full-time, 100% of the time. And I've taken a pledge. And let me tell you what the pledge was. And I raised my right hand to you now, even though you can't see me, but I'm raising my right hand to you and your listening audience. One, I will be a full-time legislator and not be absent 60% of the time like our current state senator this year. He was absent 60% of the time. Number two, I would hold no other... Adriano Espaillat is the current senator, in which the New York Public Interest Research Group said that he had the worst attendance record out of 63 state senators, and he missed 891 votes this year alone, which was about 60% of the time. And mind you, the year is only from the beginning of January until June 18th when the budget ended. I say to you that I'm going to be up there full-time 100% of the time. I will hold no other job but a state senator job and will not be looking for another job 2 years from now when everyone is going to be running for Congress. But our current state senator, for your listening audience, should know that he was elected to the state senate in 2010. In 2012, he ran for Congress, and he lost. And at that time, he had the second-worst attendance record out of 63 state senators. And the only one that had a worse record than him was in handcuffs and wore a wire for the FBI. So in 2014, he ran again for Congress, and he lost. And everyone knows he's going to run again in 2016. And I said to him on New York One last night, tell the people of the 31st Senatorial District, are you going to run for Congress in 2016? Please answer yes or no. Don't give us a politician's answer. I'm only running for Senate right now, and that's all I'm focusing on. The people want to know, are you going to run for Congress in 2016? Yes or no? And do you know, on New York One, he never answered the question. He backtracked.
He did by not answering.
He never answered the question. Because I've said that if you want to run for Congress.
But didn't he by not answering?
In essence, yes. I said, if you want to run for Congress, please, God bless you. Go right ahead. But don't hold up a position that you're being paid for where you're absent 60% of the time. That's not good for you. That's not good for the people that we represent. And so the people want somebody that's going to go up there to be a fighter, that's going to stand up for the issues in which I describe, which, you know, I didn't mention the other ones, like safety and security, seniors, comprehensive health care. Those are very, very important.
About the firehouses. I mean, in the poorer communities, don't you think that we often see the fire stations disappearing?
Well, I was on the city council where we every year we fought back the administration for cutting back on firehouses. They're fire companies, because a firehouse normally has a fire company and a fire ladder. So there's two. One is the ladder that goes up to the tall buildings, and another one, the fire company fights the fire. So a firehouse normally has a fire, a company and a fire ladder company. But we fought that year after year. The bottom line is this. I've said that the most important thing is our safety and security. And then when we dial 911, we expect if there's a fire for the fire department to come immediately, not 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes later, but as quickly as possible. Ideally, you want them there in 2 or 3 minutes, but I believe the average time is about 4 minutes or something like that. And then if we dial 911 because there's shootings that are occurring in our city, we want NYPD to respond immediately in order to deal with that, because the safety and security of the people that we represent is the number one issue and concern for me.
And I also want to ask you about your views on immigration. I mentioned the DREAM Act before. Tell people what that is if they don't know.
Well, the DREAM Act is being dealt with up in the state legislature right now. meaning it was supposed to be dealt with, but it wasn't. So hopefully in this coming session, which will be 2015, beginning in January, the DREAM Act will basically allow young people that have graduated from high school, where they were brought here as young children by their parents from another country, and they may not be citizens or permanent residents, they may be allowed to have the benefits of getting tuition, credit, and grants from the state of New York in order to go to college. And so what I've said as far as education, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, yellow, green, or blue, rich or poor, education is the key to uplift all families. And in fact, the higher, the more education you receive, more income, more than likely your family will earn. So the welfare of your family, the health, the housing, and education, and family structure, and eating healthy, the more money you earn, more than likely it will be a lot more positive impact on the family and your children. So that's what the DREAM Act is about. And God willing that next year that the state legislature, more specifically the state Senate, will pass that. Because if your listeners don't know, the state Senate up in Albany, 63 members, is led by the Republicans and the Independent Democratic Caucus. And in fact, my former colleague, Oliver Capel, who I've basically worked with in the city council for 12 years, he is running to be the next state senator in the Riverdale area, and he's running against Jeff Klein, and Jeff Klein is the head of the Independent Democratic Caucus. And I've asked this question when I've gone out in support of my colleague Oliver Capel. I'm a city boy, so I didn't really grow up in the South or where there were snakes. I've asked the question, how do you kill a snake? And the answer I get from people that know, you cut off the head. And so Oliver Capel is running against Jeff Klein to beat him in order to be the next state senator, because Jeff Klein is the head of the IDC, the Independent Democratic Caucus, and we want that eliminated, because basically they've conspired and consulted with the Republicans to lead the state Senate instead of the Democratic Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is a Democrat, who is a black woman that's been leading the state Democratic senators up in Albany. And so I'm hoping to go up to be a state senator and standing next to honest Democrats that have integrity and transparency in order to move our city and our state forward. And that's what I'm hoping to do when I take office on January with the help of all Democrats this Tuesday, September 9th, in the Democratic primary.
Well, let me ask you also your worldview. I mean, I should bring up that you're a marathon runner and that you just did a race for peace.
Well, it wasn't really a race. It was a run.
Well, it'll run. But still, it was 12.8 miles of running.
Yes, it was about 13 miles. And this run for peace, someone asked me, well, why did you want to do this run for peace? And I ran from 26th Street and 9th Avenue, which I said earlier is the southern end of the senatorial district, to 228th Street and Marble Hill Avenue, which is the most northern end of the senatorial district. But about 3 weeks ago, when I was jogging, and I normally jog straight down Broadway from where I live, there were police and news reporters and caution, do not cross tape. And what occurred was two individuals were shot and killed on 151st Street and Broadway in the area called Hamilton Heights. And so I said that this type of killing must stop. And so what I did is I tried to talk to my staff to put together a run for peace to eliminate violence in our communities, in our city, our state, our country, and the world. And I said I wasn't taking a position as to, for example, in Israel and Gaza or in Ukraine and Russia or in Nigeria, what's happening there, or wherever violence may raise its ugly head. I said that this was a run for peace to bring people together. And at seven different locations with clergy, and if clergy was not there, with just a normal person saying a prayer for peace. And that's what we did in this run for peace, which was last Sunday, to promote peace and unity and respect in our city, our state, and our world.
Well, on that note, our time has come to an end. But is there something I haven't asked you that you would like to say?
Well, I just say that this race, the 31st Senatorial District, there's three individuals in it. And so if anyone lives in the listening area of the 31st Senatorial District, which I just described, Marble Hill, all of Inwood, all of Washington Heights, parts of Hamilton Heights, Upper West Side, and part of Chelsea down to the Elliott Houses, I ask you to let you know that there's three individuals running. There's Louis Tejada, there's Adriana Espert, and there's myself, Robert Jackson. And I'm asking them to take a look at my record. Go online to voterobertjackson.com or give our office a call at 917-475-1550. We're looking for volunteers. We're going to win this. It's going to be a victory for the people of the 31st Senatorial District. Hopefully they will send me up to Albany as a full-time legislator, not part-time, someone that's not going to run for office again in 2 years, someone that's not going to hold another job by representing them up in Albany. And that's what this race is about. And I thank you, Deidre, for allowing me to be on Blake Radio in order to talk to your listeners about the issues and concerns that impact the 31st Senatorial District.
And is your district ethnically diverse? It is, right?
Oh, it is, in fact.
Hispanic and black? Or?
Yes, most of the district is in northern Manhattan, meaning Washington Heights and Inwood. And majority of the district in Washington Heights and Inwood, they're Latino, with the majority of the Latino population, Dominican. And then you have Hamilton Heights, which is black and Latino. And then the Upper West Side, which is mainly white. And then going down to Chelsea and in the Elliott Houses, you have blacks and Latinos and some Chinese there and Asians. So the district is very, very diverse. And believe me, I said, wait a minute. Wait, what's down there at 26th Street and 9th Avenue? So my staff have a phone call into that area. They've gone to knock on the doors. And I went down there myself and walk through that development in the two buildings that's in the district and talk to some of the people. And they're just like you and I, just trying to live and support their families and provide and to give their kids a good education. And that's what everybody wants. So I thank you for having me.
Certainly, and we do want folks out there, someone with a good moral character. So if you're in Robert Jackson's district, consider voting for him on November 4th. September 9th,
okay.
And then get out and vote again on November 4th. Yes, but let me correct that right away. It's September 9th, folks, which is Tuesday. It's not that long from now. So get yourself out there, and please go out there in numbers. And again, I want to thank you, Robert Jackson, for coming on the show today. It's been my pleasure to have you as our guest.
Well, thank you for having me, and I hope to come and speak to your listening audience once I'm elected the senator representing the 31st Senatorial District.
And also, folks, if you got time, go down there to your tell them your address so they can go down to your headquarters and volunteer.
Sure. Our address is 728 West 181st Street, and that's between Broadway and Fort Washington Avenue, next to two pizza shops. You have Domino's Pizza and a regular pizza shop, George's Pizza, and right next to Dunkin' Donuts. And there's a beehive of activity there. Volunteers are working in order to make sure that we win this election coming up September the 9th.
And there you go. So thank you again, Robert Jackson, and I want to thank my listeners for making my topic topically yours. And we're going to end the
thank
show
you.
Now.
Thank you, Deidre.
You're quite welcome. And okay. We're going to end the show now with Political Campaign.
Throughout the course of my campaign, we have seen a lot of heartbreak. We have seen a lot of danger, but you all have stayed with me. And so for all of your support, I would really like to thank you. Though my opposition thinks of you as the lowest of the low. Well, I don't think that's fair. There are a lot of worse people out there. Please understand, I'm working for you. This is your campaign too.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.